Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know, the leaves on the trees are falling to the sky.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitzin. I haven't been angry for a while. I'm always angry, but somebody who's even angrier than me, the big redhead, Dan Cesage, Athena Private Wealth, has decided to bless us with his presence. Dan Cesage, welcome aboard, man. What's going on?
Welcome. Not as angry as you lately.
No, I'm an angry guy, and, you know, it's just the way life goes. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things I don't like, and there's a lot of things I don't like, a lot of, you know, the political stuff that's going on. I don't like the administration. I don't like the guy in charge. We could go anywhere you want in those topics, but I think those you agree with me on so far. But
yeah, you and me and most of the rest of the country, I think.
You know, it's amazing. And let's talk about him for a minute, because here's what bothers me about our great President Obama. Okay, this is what bothers me. I don't care that he's a Democrat. I don't really care about a lot of his beliefs. But I do find it, first of all, I find it embarrassing that he didn't have the stones to pick up the phone and call Netanyahu whether you like him or not. You know, world leaders are supposed to be above the petty BS. And I don't like the fact that he didn't have the stones to pick up the phone, you know, until 4 days later and say congratulations. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. In every aspect of this administration, it's if he doesn't get his way, he goes and pouts about it. He'll say one thing, and then when things happen against him, he's completely against it. There's an excuse for everything. The guy has no leadership qualities whatsoever. None.
And that's what he's shown over his term, is he has nothing. Now, again, I don't care what he is, party-wise. But what I do care about is that the president of the United States is the CEO of the world's largest corporation. And to me, not only is he not a good leader for that, he has no financial background. He has no clue of what to do next. But now he's also become an antagonistic guy that he's trying to bully everybody because he wants to try to set his way now. What do you think of all that?
No, everything you say is absolutely correct. And, you know, you likened him to a CEO of a major firm, which he in fact is. But any CEO that acted in the manner he's acted in the last 6.5 years would have been booted 4.5 years ago, if not earlier. The guy is awful. There's opportunity. People say, oh, well, the Democrats or the Republicans are against him. Yeah, they're against him. But if you look back at history, in most recent history, you look back to Reagan's term. Democrats weren't working real well with him. In Clinton, Republicans weren't working with them. Did they get things done? They most certainly did, because they swallowed the pride and figured out what is the best way of getting something done. It's not like they go this whole thing about how he's the smartest guy in the room. Smartest guy in my ass. He's an intelligent guy. There's no doubt about it. But he's no smarter than a whole lot of people out there. So I don't buy into that argument.
And I agree. Look, he is very smart. Listen, the guy managed to get elected twice. How do you like that? Who's smart? So,
not the American public.
And I have no problem with any of that. And, you know, listen, they had no problem working with Clinton. They had no problem working with Reagan. Even the Bushes. Everybody seemed to work together. As much as they might have had disdain or problems, somehow things got done. And, of course, now we have a guy that wants to get nothing done and wants to create nothing but grief for everybody. But what really bothers me is really the antagonistic tone. And now that he especially has towards Israel, which is another problem. Now, you may like Israel, you may not like Israel. And I don't tell people who they should or should not like. But the point is that Israel is a very good ally to the United States. A lot of the great technology that we all benefit from comes from Israel. Teva Pharmaceuticals and many other places come from there. Now, why is this guy trying to wipe them off the map?
I don't have a clue. You know, it seems like every problem in the Middle East is always pointed at Israel. And it's Hamas, and I think even the Palestinian state, their dedicated goal is to eliminate Israel, to make them, you know, no more. So who's wrong in this deal? The Israelis are willing to live with it. And, you know, granted, they do things that aren't what people are going to want. But the fact is, they're way more negotiable than any of these other clowns.
Right. So, you know, look, and this is why I hate politics. I mean, you know, in general, of course, we know that the framers of the Constitution, you know, when they first did it, obviously didn't know there was going to be 92 billion people on this earth. They didn't realize that, you know, that nobody was going to get along and that there was going to be all these issues, and not to mention the fiscal issues going on. But let me ask you a question, just your take. What's your take on what's going on in Indiana and now in Arkansas? What's your take on all that?
You know, I can't believe these politicians allow themselves to get these pickles anyway. If it's non-discriminatory, then why do they have to go back and change it? And there absolutely shouldn't be any discrimination. But I think what the law's intent was to protect somebody from being sued for saying, that's not part of my religious belief, I'm not going to go along with it. It wasn't to allow people to say, well, I'm not going to do this or that because you're gay. That wasn't it. But in writing these laws, wouldn't you have sat down and say, okay, we know there's going to be backlash. How are we going to make this law palatable to where we can protect people's rights from being sued for a frivolous reason? And they didn't do it. So in a nutshell, answer to your question is, politicians all over, and in this case, Indiana and Arkansas, are complete idiots. I can't believe we keep electing these morons in.
And you know, and it's funny because, you know, Arkansas, Walmart, I mean, you know, I can't imagine Walmart would leave Arkansas, but that could be a rather ugly situation at some point, if, you know, because, you know, you have to remember, and you know what really bothers me, Dan, about all this stuff is now you got people saying, well, but Apple, you know, Apple came out against Tim Cook last week, and I mean, Tim Cook came out against, you know, Indiana last week, and I go, okay, so fine, so he came out, so what? But he does business in Saudi Arabia, and I go, so what? You know, he's making a business decision in Saudi Arabia, and in Saudi Arabia, they are still living, in my opinion, in the Dark Ages. Their laws have never changed. Our laws have changed. I mean, we got out of all these things, supposedly, you know, in the Civil War. Was supposed to be the end. Of course, obviously, there's changes all the time, but discrimination, which is exactly what this law is about. I mean, you know, it's discriminating against somebody, which then leads you to, you know what? I can discriminate as a gay, so if I don't like this person, I can say that he's gay and discriminate against him because I don't like him for whatever reason. And that's, to me, the problem. I mean, Apple doing business in Saudi Arabia? How about all the companies that do business in China? What do you think? China? If you've ever been to China, into the factories, you'll see that it ain't no picnic there either. What do you think?
Oh, no, you're absolutely correct. Again, everything's made for a business decision. And, you know, for somebody like Tim Cook, though, to make a statement anywhere, you have to be consistent in your beliefs. And I guess, you know, you can make the statement and everything, but the reality is you're dealing with a lot of people out there that aren't on the up and up. And you have to determine, well, is this right or wrong, or what am I going to do? So it's a hard decision to make. As a business decision, you're going to say, okay, am I going to make money? And you use that as the basis for it. But it's really harmful to the individual people. And then you got to make a moral choice. And that's up to each individual. But I agree with you on the discrimination thing. But my point being on the previous thing is, they shouldn't allow discrimination, but they shouldn't allow frivolous lawsuits for somebody. As a matter of fact, I just use Hobby Lobby as a good example, forcing them to provide contraceptives for people in a business that they don't agree with. And I don't know how you do that. I mean, how does a church, what would keep somebody from going into the Catholic Church right now with this law or whatever it is and saying, you have to marry us because the law says you have to marry us? Well, the Catholic Church doesn't allow that, and that's their business.
Absolutely.
They're not harming
Absolutely.
Anybody by preventing it because they can get married somewhere else.
Absolutely. Look, I may not agree. Listen, I don't agree with any religion in total because I think those laws are antiquated as well. But overall, I give you the right to choose there. That's your religion. In your house of worship, you should be able to do whatever you want. It's like a country club, and there's a whole bunch of more things here. But we're coming up to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dan Sesich some more from Athena Private Wealth, and he's going to talk to us about how to prepare for maybe a market that may get a little bit more rocky here. This is Todd Bubba Horowitz. I am with Dan Sesich. This is The Bubba Show. We will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show.
All right, boys, follow me. Mostly in A. Stay with me now. Listen up. It's philosophical.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my angry friend, the redhead, the big redhead, but actually a very good friend of mine, and I do have a lot of respect for his opinion, also for what he does, and he does work with Athena Private Wealth. So, Dan, you know, you and I talk all the time, and you know, to your credit, you bought John Deere at the rock bottom, and you've been, you know, fairly bullish, and I know recently you've kind of, you know, last couple of times you've been on, plus, you know, we talk when we see each other on the floor, you're kind of changing, not your tune, I mean, you're not getting negative, like, oh my God, but you are starting to think that maybe the rubber bands may be stretched a little bit too far here. Maybe the extension of what's going on is not good. What are you thinking, and what are you looking for now yourself?
Well, you know, I agree again with you on that. I'm not turning negative. But if you look at last week when we had that drop, I think it was Wednesday night, around 8 o'clock, the S&P's dropped 20 points for nothing. That tells you there's some nervousness out there. It's on light volume. And any type of bad news, and this wasn't even any bad news that triggered that I could find, any type of bad news is going to be greeted very, very negatively here now. We've had some weak economic numbers in the first quarter. I'm going to attribute that to weather, just like last year. I think it's going to be the same thing. However, they're there. And then we're coming up into earnings season. And you watch, if people are missing, and I guarantee you they're going to attribute it to a stronger dollar, these stocks are going to be hit and hit hard. So what you have to do right now, look at your portfolio, see where these stocks are. If they've been jumping through the roof and have levels that probably aren't sustainable, you might want to reconsider what you have. It doesn't mean you have to get out of everything, but there could very well be a downdraft here, anywhere between 5 and 15%. It won't surprise me. It also won't surprise me if we don't see it.
You know, and again, I agree with that. So, you know, now let's talk about the earnings because they start this week. You know, I mean, how low can they set the bar? They've already set the bar so low. I mean, does it bother you that we have to keep adjusting and manipulating numbers so these guys can look good? Does that ever concern you? And maybe not as an investor, but just in general. Does it bother you as an investor, and does it bother you as just a general guy?
Yeah, it does, because every time in the past, all these earnings seasons, everything's been shot down a little bit, and expectations have been damped. And the thing is, oftentimes they beat them. And if you look at the past recent quarters of earnings, we did beat. But we beat on lowered expectations. So is that really a beat? I don't know. And can companies continue to do this? Because right now you say, how low can the bar go? Well, they're going to have to start digging a trench to get it down there.
Ain't that the truth? I mean, you know, and it's really a shame. You know, what happened, you know, when we were brought up to be honest, right? And tell it like it is. And, you know, you screwed up. And if you did good, you did good. And that was the way it was. Now, you know, companies manipulate their numbers so they can look good. You know, certain companies are famous for under-promising and over-delivering all the time. I mean, what is that guy like the big angry redhead, Dan Cesich, who is seen, by the way, on CNBC, Fox, Bloomberg, BNN, but more importantly, on The Buzz Show. What does a guy like you think about all this stuff? I mean, you're a pretty straight shooter. You know, you're not one of those, you know, guys that duck. What's your take on all this crap?
No, I'm in the same agreement. It's probably why we get along so well, even though we have divergent views. It's when we tell it like it is. There's not, oh, this is going to happen, or I guarantee you this is going to happen. We look at what's going on, say, here's what I think's going to happen, and here's the reasons why. And if it doesn't, we don't say, oh, well, I said this, and I meant that. It's, no, okay, I was wrong, I was proven wrong, or I was correct, and this is the methodology I used. So you have to be a straight shooter, and there's too many hucksters out there selling their bill of goods just to get the press. And you and I both well know, Todd, that the more the more outlandish you are, the better press you're going to be, because an outlandish statement gets YouTube. What you and I say, it gets somebody thinking, and thinking in a more realistic manner, and that's what we want to happen.
Well, I mean, you know, look, I mean, in my eyes, you know, again, you know, you're from the south side, I'm from the north side. But, you know, at the end, I mean, we just both want to be able to tell like we think it. And, you know, the nice thing about telling it like it is, you never have to remember what you said.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like,
lies are hard to cover, but truth is truth. You'll always remember that as it happened.
You know, it's funny because, you know, I do an update from some of my webinar stuff during the week, and I forgot to put the sheet on. I go, well, I said to everybody, I don't have to worry about it because I remember what I wrote. And I always write the same thing anyways. It's not like I'm going to have to change my mind here. I'm not going to, you know, because I don't, look at, you know, I went on Fox last year, you know, almost every Wednesday was up. You know, every week I'm calling for the market to go down and it's making new highs, you know. And, you know, the funny thing is, I didn't duck, you know, and when it goes my way, which it has for the last number of Wednesdays, I'm not gloating either. This is what I see. And I think this is important, you know, and I think this is something I want you to address. The most important thing you can do when you're investing, and I know you deal with much more with investors. You are a trader by nature, but even you've become more of an investor over time. I mean, you're more into the, you know, wealth management, right? And that's kind of what you do. Now, as an investor, you should not be worried about the gyrations during the day of a trading session, should you?
No, because as an investor, you look at things at a longer term view. And if you start mistaking what's happened on a day-to-day basis with what your portfolio is going to do, you're invariably going to get caught wrong. You'll make a decision when the markets are way down. Let's say you'll get out of positions that you shouldn't get out of, long-term positions. Because, like you say, you have to look at this thing in a long-range view. A trader sees a market almost on an instantaneous basis. So if there's a change throughout the course of the day, and we know a lot of them. You'll see a market go down 10%, up 10% in any given security at some time or another. As a trader, you can watch it, but as an investor, if it starts getting banged and you get panicky and dump out, goes right back to where you were and then up some, who's out? You're out, and it's not worth doing it. If you have a solid company, stick with that company for those reasons. Don't be trading the rhetoric that's thrown around on TV or in the press. You have to be careful.
I couldn't agree more because, you know, you and I do a similar spot, you know, on one of the networks and, you know, we're always with a couple other people and the other people are always the drool heads that, you know, buy everything. And, you know, I'm very bullish. I'm, you know, never once do you hear anything. Well, I'm buying this. I'm buying that. Of course, you know, they're talking their own book as a rule and things like that. And to me, I also find that as an issue. You know, because, you know, what I always look for, like if I'm going to recommend a specific stock on air, you better bet your ass I'm either long or short that stock. Whatever side I'm recommending, you can bet your ass I have a position in that stock. And I hate guys when I look at the ticker and they have, you know, because you have to make a disclosure when you go on.
Mm-hmm.
I hate when you guys says, oh, I love this most unbelievable company ever. You got to own it. You got to buy it. And then they show the ownership. He don't own it. The company don't own it. Nobody owns it. Nobody's family owns it. But you got to own it. Now, explain that to me, will you, buddy?
I think the same thing. I don't understand it. And even, you know, sometimes when we're on, they'll ask off the cuff, what do you like, what don't you like? And if I own a stock, if they don't ask me about a specific stock, if they say, what do you like? And I say, I like this stock for this reason. And I'll say, full disclosure, I do own this stock, or I'm going to buy this stock. If they ask me a question about a specific stock that I don't own, I can give them an opinion on that stock. But that's because they asked, not because I'm promoting them in one way or the other. And it's an unbiased opinion. And like you say, I think the best recommendations are recommendations that are made when somebody actually owns the company through stocks.
Right. I mean, you know, if you own it, then talk about it. I don't have a problem with that. Look, I never got mad at anybody for being opposite my opinion. That's what opinions are like. That's why we all have one. You know, like assholes, we all got one. But, you know, I mean, I never got mad at it. I don't care. I know that I'm not always going to be right. But from a long-term view, you know, I look at things, you know, life has changed for the life of a trader. You know, the life that we knew originally, you know, when we were both on the floor every day and the everyday grind of being a trader versus an investor, and things are different now. So you have to change your scope in the way that you view things, you know, as you look forward. And that's what we want. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about this because I think it's important to understand a lot of the differences. In the meantime, I'm with my man, Dan Stesich, Athena Private Wealth. To reach out to him, 847-299-8877. Catch him on. He's on Fox at least once a week. He's on BNN all the time for my Canadian friends. He's on Bloomberg, not as much because they've cut back for all of us. But, you know, he's just, I think it's somebody that is worth investing a phone call. I think you'll find out a lot of good things. And I know, Dan, you're not muscling people to sign up to bring their money. You are more than happy to just discuss and give them some ideas that can help better. And that's what I really love about what you do, is you're not looking to turn anybody over. You're really just there to help. And if it can work something together, that's great as well. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org. The site is looking awesome. We got some great things. Got a membership spot for you now. And we're just putting up article after article. And we are typically ahead of everybody else. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break.
Margie said, Roy, you ain't listening to me.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with my man, Dan Sesage, Athena Private Wealth, 847-299-8877. A great guy. But Dan, I want to take it. Let's turn the clock back, you know, 10 years, okay, 15 years, whatever it was. You know, we were active traders, and, you know, you were manning the desk and, you know, down there, and things were crazy and they were flying. And you know, you had to be ready and you had to look at the market in a whole different view, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. You had to be ready for anything at any given moment.
So, you know, what are some of the things you did back in those days when you were trading that actively?
Well, you know, it was a combination of things. I was brokering as well as trading, but both require pretty much a similar type of knowledge and awareness of what's going on in the market. And the reality was, being on the floor, we had access to almost any information source that was out there. So you had to be able to react on a moment's notice. If a headline came across, or if somebody called you right beforehand and said, hey, I'm hearing this, you had to know what was going on. And not only had to know what was going on, but how do I react properly to this? So you use everything that was available to you and said, it's going to do this to the market, that to the market, at which point you start calling customers and saying, hey, here's what's going on. Want to let you know where you're at and what you need to do. And as far as my own personal investments, it's a little more difficult, but you had to make decisions, again, based on the same things. And it seemed back then, the markets moved. Actually, the markets didn't move any faster, but because we weren't so reliant on a computer for the trading end of it, everything was a little more fluid and way more active as to what was going on a minute-to-minute basis.
Right. So we had to be ready to move at all times, because in those days, a long-term capital gain might have been 6 or 7 minutes.
6 or 7 seconds. Right. I mean, really, it moved that fast.
Right. So, but now, because of computers, and this is one of the things that I think this is a problem. I think this is what causes a lot of grief to a lot of investors, is the high frequency, not the high frequency, but the technology that we had. Now, you know, everybody's looking at their, like, people are looking at their IRAs like every day, like every, all during the day, they're looking at their iPhone or whatever. Don't you find that to be problematic?
Well, yeah, you know, you get into that point, am I an investor or am I a trader? And your IRA, you should be an investor, because that's a long-term thing. And when you start messing around with things on a day-to-day basis that should be looked at on a quarterly and yearly basis, you're going to get yourself in trouble if you act on it. I guess it's one thing to look at it, but if you start getting overly concerned about what position you have and why this is happening or why that's happening and making decisions based on that, you're going to get in trouble in the long run. It's not going to help you out.
You know, and I think that, and that's what I find troublesome, because even the more active traders, even guys like me, you know, look, let's look back. If I go back in history, you know, at one point in my career, I was trading, you know, 15, 20,000 contracts a day. Okay. Because that's what we did, right? We were doing all kinds of hedges. We were, you were working on pennies, But, you know, you work on enough pennies with a big enough quantity and it adds up to real money. When you're actually now investing, you can't trade now. There's no trade. Every trade you make right now for most people should be with the expectation of it either be a swing trade, which would be last days, weeks, or months, or a long-term trade that they're going to put in their RA. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, when you put a trade on, and again, as an investor, because there's still traders out there, but as an investor, you have to say, okay, what's my time frame on this? And like you say, it might be a swing trade, it might be a longer-term trade. And you also, if it's a swing trade, if you're only going for like 3 to 5 weeks, it's kind of on the short end of it. If it doesn't react the way you want, you better reevaluate pretty quick. And if it does react, have an exit point that you said from the start, if it goes here, I'll get out. And that's either way, upside or downside. And you're going to have to make your own decision as to how to do that. But as far as an investment, if you look at a company, you know, XYZ company, they do this, they make this type of widget. And over the course of time, they've done, from the past, done relatively well, let's say 3 or 4% growth, and you expect it to continue and maybe pick up a little bit. And you buy that company, again, keep an eye on it but it's going to be a longer-term trade.
And again, that's what I think most people should be looking at. I mean, this is important stuff, you know. You know, and Dan's techniques, you know, used to be like, what was it Payne Weber or Merrill Lynch? When he speaks, people listen.
Yeah, I think it was, who was that?
I don't know. I can't remember either. But at the end of the day, what it really means is that, look, you don't need to look at your iPhone every 5 minutes. You don't need to be, you know, worried about your long-term portfolio. Now, again, Dan and I are a little different here. I believe in having some sort of a hedge on my long-term, and we enter trades a little bit differently. But at the end of the day, Dan and I both agree that the markets, you know, I don't know, 10 years from now, 20 years from whatever, they'll be higher than they are now. And it comes back into your time horizon of when you need to be out. So, Dan, let's take a view of what's your view on oil here?
Well, it's pretty funny. I guess, you know, the best way for us to relate to it is the price of gas. And you notice yourself over the past few weeks, gas has jumped up like 70 or 80 cents. Yet oil really hasn't jumped that much. And some people, I did a little research on it. Some people say, oh, it's because the dollar's gotten stronger or the dollar's gotten weaker. And that's BS. The percentage move isn't there. There is tons of supply out there. And there were worries of the Middle East, the Yemen incursion over that was going to close. I think it's the Straits of Aden. But the reality is we have so much money or so much oil being produced out of North America and Mexico that it's just completely buffered any of these day-to-day shocks in the market. So as far as oil, you're probably going to see a longer-term view of oil between $55 and $75. I think that probably is going to be fair. And we should see gasoline stay around these places. And these day-to-day gyrations, I don't know where they got the 70-cent pickup in the price of gas, but they did. I still don't understand that. You'll have people that tell you that prices go up or go down as fast as they go up, and they're lying. I mean, anybody who's watched the price of gas, it slowly creeps down, and then there's one little thing, and it jumps up. They always have an excuse for that. But reality is I think we're in good shape on oil. The one worry is that because prices went so low, you're going to knock out all these frackers. Well, yeah, you're going to knock them out when it's below $50, but as soon as it goes to $55, they're going to start producing again. It's basically just turning on a switch. So these things have already been committed to. The price is there. So we've got a lot of oil, and we're going to have a lot of oil for a long time.
That's exactly right. And you know what? What did you think? First of all, what did you think about Citigroup's call of $20 oil? What was your take on that?
You know, that's another one. We talked about this earlier. What are you going to say? You're going to say something outrageous. You're going to get all kinds of press. And that's BS. They don't have a clue when it's going down to 20. The worst of them is probably Morgan Stanley, Goldman. Goldman made a call last year about oil going to $150 or $120. Did they not? And then all of a sudden it's going down to 40. And they're saying, you know, within months of it. So they're just making guesses. And it's... their guesses are based on what position they have on. So whenever anybody tells you it's going to go down to 20, they're probably lying.
Bingo! That's why you're smart. I called it irresponsible. I thought it was ridiculous, and I said that they're probably short and trying to get out because we can see. And if you look at the commodity space in general, it's taken every shot it could possibly take. You know, from the strong dollar
to all this other crap, and it still manages to hold here, you know, in the, between 45, 48, 50. Now, Dan, you know, you mentioned gas, and I meant to ask you about this before. Now, you know, I was paying, when oil was last time it was here, I was paying like 210. I know it got under 2 in a lot of places, but, you know, when you have to get screwed by all these taxes you got to pay because of all the jackasses that are running, you know, the country and certain cities, you get screwed at every turn. You can't turn around without getting out stuck to you. However, again, I paid the other day, I paid for gas, I paid $2.85 again, and oil's in the exact same place. Now, what are you telling me that big oil ain't sticking it to me?
No, that's exactly what I'm saying. I did. I wish I saved the paper I wrote this on, because I charted the price of oil, the price of gasoline when the price of oil was where it is, and you're exactly right. So where did this extra 60 cents come in there? I'll go 2.25, because that's about what we paid around us. But where did the extra 60 cents come from?
Well, I guess
it wasn't supply demand, because the supply is there and the demand's not.
They must have needed a few extra bucks for the holidays or for the summer. I don't know, but you know, this is always a thing that really bothers me as an American. Okay, you know that they do these things. All I mean, this is not the first time they did this. You know, I can go back into the 70s. Do you remember when we had the odd and even days and you couldn't get gas?
Oh, yeah.
Everything. You know, I was pumping gas in those days. You know, I was in high school. And I was pumping gas, and it was amazing. And I go, and I said, you know, watch, gas is going to get, they're going to get it up to a dollar, okay, and then they're going to bring it back down. Everybody's going to go, oh, shoo, thank God, it's only 85 cents. Okay, well, here, now they got it to 4, so now it's under 3, so people say, oh, it's not so bad. You know, it's still cheaper, but really, they're just ratcheting up, and I guarantee you, next month, you get the earnings report, or ExxonMobil, they'll have made a fortune once again, because that's one of the troubles that goes on, and that's why Obama and his health, his clean air bill and all his other crap, big oil still does, runs a big percentage of this country. But Dan and I will talk about that when we come back because, you know, I got, as everybody knows, I got opinions about everything. And this is another, I guess something else I get to bitch about because that's just what I like to do. This is The Bubba Show. I'm with Dan Stesich from Athena Private Wealth. 847-299-8877. You got to check him out. He does know his stuff. Has put kids through college, made a good living. Now is willing to share his knowledge with you. So make sure you check him out because he is the big angry redhead. And this is The Bubba Show. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org. It is really shaping up. A site was always great, but it's getting better. We've got a lot of guest commentators now coming on, and a lot of the news you'll get there. We wrote about Yemen months before it ever happened, and you could have read about it first on The Bubba Show at thebubbashow.org. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break.
Staring up the road and pray to God I see headlights.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with my man, my friend, Dan Stesich from Athena Private Wealth. So, Dan, you know, I look at, you know, big oil, and I look at, the you know, more manipulation, which, you know, again, what I really hate about everything is I love about this country was the ability to have free markets, the ability to do things, the ability to come. You could come to this country, whether you were an immigrant or whether you were born here, whatever, but you had an opportunity to do something special. Okay. You could be Warren Buffett, become a billionaire. You could be any, you know, you could do anything. But the one thing you always had in this country was the ability to fail, but also the ability to dig yourself out of that failure. And with what's going on right now with the manipulation by the central banks, the manipulation by the government, you know, the whole thing with last week's jobs number, every single thing they do is carved up to cut down variable change for people and help them do better. In the meantime, they've totally shut down the middle class from doing anything really that great and successful. What's your take?
No, you know, that's a pretty good assessment of how society's gone. And if you bring it down to the lower level, look at little kids' soccer leagues or even baseball. They don't keep score because they don't want anybody to get offended. Well, what kind of lesson are you going to learn from that? When you fail, hopefully you'll learn a lesson and you become better the next time. So you have to allow things to progress naturally because ultimately they're going to anyway. Because these kids that play soccer at 7 and 8 years old and don't know what the score is, even though they really do, but pretend they don't, when they're in high school, they know they lose. So you've not prepared them for what's coming up in life. And business is the exact same way.
If I blow it, I blow it. Why did I blow it? If I'm a smart guy, I'm going to look back and say, well, here's what I did wrong. I'm not going to make that mistake again. Now, that doesn't mean there's a lot of people out there that don't learn from their mistakes, but those are the ones that get left behind. And that, like you say, is the value of America. We have the opportunity, should have the opportunity, to go as far as we possibly can, given our capabilities.
And that's what I think we're missing now. And that's, I think, first of all, I think that's sad, okay? Because, you know, the opportunity window, you know, with the enactment of Dodd-Frank and all the banking rules, you know, people can't borrow money anymore. The banks aren't going to loan. But in the meantime, we both know that the banks have cleaned up through this QE program. But you can't borrow money. And the poor middle class, you know, once again, gets it stuck to them because the benefits aren't there. Does that concern you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, you were talking about the banks and how well they've done over the course of time. But when you borrow at 0% and lend to anything above 0%, you're making money. So they're getting the best quality customers that are out there. And that's the only ones they're lending to. And it's the middle class that keeps business going. You know, you see all these big corporations, and that's all fine and dandy. But this world, not this world, the American society runs on middle class mom-and-pop businesses. And in order for them to expand, they have to be able to get capital. And it's been very difficult to do of late.
Okay, here's my theory, and you tell me what you think. The middle class is the engine that drives any economy. They're wealthy, will always spend what they're going to spend. They're not going to change their habits, you know, no matter what's going on. And I'm not talking about guys that made money on paper. I'm talking about, you know, real wealth. Okay, they don't change. They buy new cars. They buy new houses. In fact, when times get tough, they get richer. Why? Because they can take advantage of situations that others can't get around. The people that are entitled, they're not going to change. They basically spend every dime they get. They're entitled. You know, 47% of Americans are in some sort of public aid right now. So, but the middle class are the true drivers because they're the ones that if they're making enough money, they're going to spend it. They're going to spend their paycheck. And most of them are basically, you know, live from paycheck or month to month or whatever it is. And, it, you know, they buy based on how much is it by the month? Can I afford it in my monthly budget? And we're not getting that, which at the end of the day is really causing the major crisis in the economy. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. As you said, you know, the middle class is the engine of society in most anyone. And our middle class happened to be, well, it used to be pretty vibrant. I guess it still is. But there's a, you know, we talk about how the economy's doing and whether or not we're out of recession and everything. You go and talk to 100 people out there of our, you know, I guess class is what I'll say on this, the middle class people. And they're not feeling like we've been out of recession for a long time. Technically, you know, by definition, yeah, we have been. But things don't feel good. Even with the stock market rallying as much as it does, have you ever seen a market that's so sour? Even though we're at record levels, it just doesn't make sense to me right now. And it's because the middle class is under a lot of pressure.
You know, that's what I hate about the numbers. These, you know, I forget their correct term and everybody reminds me, but I think I block it out normally, but numbers never lie. Only the people that report them do. But you know what? It pisses me off, Dan. You know what? I keep hearing these jackasses tell me how good the housing market is. Now I know damn well that if I want to sell my house today, and I live in a pretty nice area, okay, and I live in a demand area, you know what? And if I wanted to sell my house today, I bought my house in the bottom of the market, okay, in 2009 or 8, okay? I put in money, and I got a great deal because the contractors weren't working, okay? And if I wanted to liquidate today, I'd have to take a loss on my house. Now, you tell me how good the housing market is.
No, I see the same thing. You must live in the same neighborhood I do, except on the north side, because all these houses on the southwest side, I'm hearing about how values have been increasing everywhere, and I look at the values because I have a couple rental properties that I wouldn't mind on just because I don't want to deal with them, and they're not going up. I mean, what's going on here? I'm underwater on them in terms of the value of them. I'm making a little money because of the rental, but I don't see it either. But then you hear stories about, you know, in New York City and San Francisco and Miami, and they are going through the roof. So I guess that's what it is.
Yeah, well, that's what we always look for. The few that are doing very well, we forget about. It's back to screw everybody else. Let's worry about what the wealthy are doing. And, of course, I think New York, just on a side note, I think New York's in for a little bit of trouble. You know, with the strength of the dollar, foreign money doesn't quite go as far as it used to. I want to see if they keep selling those big penthouses in New York right now to all the foreign concerns, because, you know, now, you know, when the euro was $1.40, pretty good trade, right? You know, $1.40 to $1. Now that it's $1.08, not such a good deal. I don't know. I think they might have a little problem in New York, and, you know, I don't know if that'll create more ripples throughout, but I think there could be a little bit of issue there. What do you think?
No, I think you're right, because not only that, the dollar strength is going to hurt them a little bit, but a lot of the buyers of those properties were Chinese and Russian, and Chinese aren't doing as well as they had been doing. As a matter of fact, quite a bit worse than what they were doing. They're still doing okay, and the Russians are just doing terribly, so there's a lot of money not going to be able to prop that up anymore. I don't know that it'll have a big influence on the market as a whole, because one thing you did mention is the rich are going to buy no matter what, so the loans on those properties are going to be somewhat minimal, but there will be some fallout.
And how did Russia get off? You brought up, how did Russia get off the front page? Is there no more? Is everything cured in Russia? I haven't heard about him for a while. Is everything okay?
How about Greece? Do you hear anything about Greece anymore? I'm not really that worried about Greece in terms of the big picture, but there's going to be a headline within the next 2 months about Greece, and it's not going to be a good headline. In the Russian thing, you're absolutely right. You know, people think just because we were able to box Putin out on this or that and oil prices are down, you back a wild animal into a corner, and he's likely to do something irrational. And Putin is one of those wild animals right now. I don't know what will come, if anything will. I hope not. But you better keep an eye on those two areas of the world economic events right now.
All right, Mr. Sessage, you got 1 minute. Tell us what you're thinking, what you want to do, and what you tell the average guy to do right now.
Okay, you know what? I've been bullish for a long time.
Yes, you have.
And I've been pretty solid on it. I still tend to have that view, but here are my worries. We did have weaker than expected first quarter, and I'm going to attribute it to weather. But we're getting out of that right now. Let's see what happens in late March, April, May, June. I want to see economic numbers that increase significantly relative to what we've had. And if we don't, we're going to have some problems. Also, earnings season, as you mentioned, is coming up. If earnings don't come out, there's a lot of psychological damage out in this market right now. And if there's bad news, it's going to be really bad. Good news is only going to be so-so. So in a nutshell, risk-reward is to be flat or be short.
That is my man, Dan Sessage, the big angry redhead, also from Athena Private Wealth. Check him out, 847-299-8877. This has been The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org, and also make sure you check out the Sporting Edge, because, you know, we also, not only do we trade markets, we also trade sports, and we teach you the investing part of the sports world. This is The Bubba Show, and we want to make sure that you get the great understanding, and also do check out our friends at Thinkorswim, built by traders for traders. You have been listening to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Hope you enjoyed it. Everybody have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Put some feel good in my soul.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.